bring the committee to order. I mean, SB 374. I guess we'll start with administration. Is administration's lead person here today? Would you join us? No, we have not. Let me just say that we have had worked up a committee draft. It is in the members' packets. It basically makes some substantial changes from the original governor's bill. As you all know, we passed a bill similar to this last year. The governor vetoed it, in turn submitted a new legislation that met with his requirements. That bill we have taken and done up a work draft. What we've done basically was to remove the requirement that the Commissioner of Education authorize the REAs to participate in the pools based upon the feeling that Department of Education is not that comfortable in making that financial decision, and moreover, to me personally, if the REAs have a problem, you've got to grab hold of the problem, not just not allow them to participate in an investment pool. That if their problems, if there are problems, it's probably not the result of investing in this pool that all the rest of the municipalities are investing in, but probably some other, management problem of some sort. So that provision apparently had been requested by the Department of Law based upon the notion that the state has some overall responsibility for REAs, and the Department of Law's concern, and they're here to express those. But then the other changes that we made was one to exempt them from the registration requirements of the Securities Act, while keeping in the fraud provisions of the Securities Act, and that's something that the Department of Commerce and Economic Development supports, and they're here to speak about that. We removed the Department of Revenue as a management option for this pool because, here again, this is in the work draft. It was our view last year as a committee that the state shouldn't be involved in this, based upon the increased liability the state would take on if they were to assume management of this investment pool. I haven't changed my mind. Perhaps the committee can be convinced that the state should be running this pool if in the future the municipalities have a hard time putting it all together and managing it themselves. But again, I haven't been convinced. Those are basically the changes. We'll let the administration give it their best shot in terms of convincing us, this committee, that their approach is the right approach.
So. Mr. Chairman, do you want to have the bill before us in a committee substitute, or do you want to wait?
I would just assume wait. We'll just start with let the department comment both on the original bill and as it falls in line with the the new draft as well. You'll have to make your case for why you should be included, Brian. So go ahead and state your name for the record.
Okay, are we on the teleconference?
I think we're on teleconference.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, fellow members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brian Andrews. I'm Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Revenue. The Department of Revenue supports Senate Bill 374 as originally submitted. Senate Bill 374 addresses the investment safety, liquidity, and management issues which previous legislation failed to take into consideration. SB 374 is good legislation which will provide the municipalities and other public entities with a secure investment alternative for managing their short-term investment needs. The committee substitute for Senate Bill 374 does three things to the original bill. As the chairman pointed out, at first it deletes the requirement that the Commissioner of Education approve REA's involvement in the investment pool. The Department of Revenue is neutral on this change and will defer to the Department of Law's opinion on this matter. The second change is the inclusion of language which would exempt an investment pool formed under this legislation from registration under AS 4555. Again, it is the Department of Revenue's understanding that the existing statutes currently exempt this investment pool from having to register with the state. If this truly is the case, we fail to see the necessity of the insertion of this language into the legislation. The final change is one which removes the Department of Revenue as an alternative choice for the management of this investment pool. The Department of Revenue strongly opposes this solution from the original legislation. The argument that removal of the Department of Revenue as an alternative management choice would reduce the liability to the state is simply not true. The liabilities and obligations surrounding this investment pool are mandated by the contractual terms and conditions between the management of the investment pool and the participants. Until the state is asked to manage the investment pool, we fail to see any liability to the state. Mr. Burgess has pointed out in testimony publicly that the investment pool may fail to meet its objectives. Mr. Burgess also recognizes that the Department of Revenue can provide the management and resource capabilities for this investment pool to meet its objectives and maximizing the investment returns while maintaining low market and credit risk to the participants. The Department of Revenue urges the committee to retain the Department of Revenue as an alternative for the management of this investment pool. Thank you for this opportunity to testify before you today, and I'll certainly respond to any questions you may have.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Mr. Chair, just Brian, a bit more discussion if we could. I'm not so, you know, the municipalities are certainly creatures of the state, but I'm not terribly persuaded that they have to be. Right now you have auditing authority and so on. I mean, there's a whole lot that goes on in where we're really very weak in the way grants are looked at and so on. Why would we want to get our hands into something else that may create more need for state employees and state involvement? The municipalities have been structured out there and carrying on their business for a long time, and in many cases I think do certainly as good as, if not better, a job than munis. Why would you want to get in on this?
Through the chair, Senator. We don't necessarily want to get in on it, but what we don't want to do is be precluded as an alternative to these participants. We're under, you know, the prudent investor rule. We're under some very strict guidelines to look at a total investment return and to look at maintaining both market and credit risks at a very low level. But we can also bring to the table, and I think you heard me say this argument last year, some resources that may make this bring economies of scale to this investment pool. So if in fact when this investment pool is formed and it's going along, they find out that they can't bring enough resources to make this cost effective, then possibly the state could bring those resources in to make the pool cost effective. But before we would ever get involved in something like that, we would want to manage that investment pool.
Is the passage of this legislation contingent on your being a potential player?
Through the chair, Senator, I think that we would view this as a very strong opinion and that we would like to be included as an investment.
That's not the answer that I asked for. I mean, I didn't ask for a specific answer, but I asked for an answer.
Okay.
Is that a condition of signing of the legislation?
Well, obviously, we would inform or give the governor our opinion.
Which would be?
And our opinion from the Department of Revenue is that we would veto it if we weren't included.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see. Let's hear from Larry next. You look like we're getting ready to get up, so you might as well. Get up and sit down.
Mr. Chairman, I would be interested in the comments that Brian raised, and I think that Larry can answer for us regarding the, whether or not we need two. So on.
Go ahead and state your name for the record, and then go with your.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Larry Carroll. I'm with the Department of Commerce, Division of Banking and Securities. We reviewed the proposed legislation both in its current form and in the committee substitute. And as you pointed out, the committee substitute excludes the participants in the pool and the municipalities from registration in the pool itself are the registration provisions of the Act. And what that in effect does is makes a clear path as to who is not required to register. Under normal circumstances, every investment pool is registrable, everyone, unless we can find an exemption. And there is an exemption for governmental instrumentalities, for issues of governmental instrumentalities. Well, this is kind of a third-party governmental instrumentality issue in that it's municipality funds pooled, and then the product of that is an undivided interest in that pool. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it just makes it a little cleaner by having the specific exemption language in there. We have no objection to that whatsoever. And there's no need. There would be additionally an exemption for offer to institutional investor, which we could say that the municipality was because it had full knowledge of what it was doing when it put the money in that pool, because the statute spells out what the parameters of those investments are. So we don't really see any need for the kind of disclosure that you would normally see in an investment pool. It's there, and the protections are there. I would like to make clear, however, as you have stated, that the fraud provisions of the Act would apply, and if the pool was promoted in a manner or a course that would work a deceit upon someone or a fraud, then those persons would be subject to the civil and criminal penalties of the Act if it was misrepresented or mismanaged. As to the point concerning the Department of Revenue's involvement, an observation. The entity that's going to form this pool is a nonprofit. Nonprofit corporation is going to form up, create the pool, and operate it. That entity is going to have very limited, if any, experience in this type of activity. It's going to be advised, going to have investment advisor and so forth and so on. I think that the more options you can create for the municipalities and the pool to look to as resources, the better off you are. If that nonprofit should run into difficulty with the management of the pool or the creation, the flow of it. I think the safety net concept of having the municipalities be able to exercise their voting rights as members of that pool to say, hey, help us, you know, take it over to the Department of Revenue before it, you know, the costs get too much or we're losing money on it. As to the question of liability to revenue, I don't, you know, see any there in that regard. So I just think it's more options. And it would be, if I was an investor, if you were an investor, the more options you have, the better you like it. As to the investment advisor who actually advises the pool, there is a requirement that they be registered as an investment advisor under the Federal Act in the bill, in both versions. And the only suggestion that we would have is that they be required to register under the Alaska Act as well, so we have a handle on them and can, you know, reach out and touch somebody if there's a problem.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator,
if I could go over your comments then.
Mm-hmm.
You would disagree with one, you would not, you didn't make any comment. You haven't a comment on the one about the approval of the commissioner for REAAs.
That's
really a matter for...
It's a matter of department law and education And as you know, that investment decision has to be made by each individual instrumentality, I would think. And
Yeah.
If they require authorization, that's a matter between the two of them.
Okay, so you would not, oh, no, the registration requirements in section two, you would not object to that?
I would not.
Okay. But you would like to see the section three retained, that is, to allow the option of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And am I correct that on four, about the registration, you would agree with that?
I would agree that the registration of the investment advisor is appropriate and necessary, and I would add...
Is that what this does?
Well, yes. We thought it did with the... Did you see our redraft?
I did get there.
Yeah, could we take a look at that and see if it did what he said? That's what confused me a little, because you...
Yeah, I thought...
No, it does. It does, clearly.
So that, in other words, that's great. Okay. Thank you very much, Larry.
I'm sorry, I overlooked that. My apologies.
Okay.
I'll be happy to answer any other questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any questions? Okay, thank you. Next, we've got Marjorie Odlin from the Department of Law.
Uh-huh. Here's our answer.
Maybe. We know better than to really give an answer.
The other day we were talking about whether or not the department has general authority, or the administration, either whichever department, I guess it'd be education, has general authority to review REA's investment policies or whatever, and you were going to look into that, but anyway.
Okay. I guess first, can I just go over the points that have been brought up, just so you know where department law stands on them. First of all, we do agree with revenue that it's best not to specifically exempt these investment pools from the registration of the Securities Act. I think it saves problems in the future from ever having to save it if they ever become required to do it. I mean, if they're not required to now, we're in agreement there's no reason to specifically state that, because things may change with them that they should be required, and that way we don't have to go back and change this law too. Second, we...
So you differ then with Department of Commerce on that?
I differ with them in the sense that I don't think that it's necessary to put it in the law. I'm not disagreeing about the fact they aren't part of it right now.
But they're saying be clear, I guess. I mean, that was the way I read what they said, was what Larry says, be clear about it. If you intend it to be exempt, then so state. And you're saying that it's not required, so
be muzzy.
Don't say it.
Well, I think we feel that way only because with revenue, we have to agree, we're not quite sure what this animal's going to be yet. I think it's hard to decide what it's going to be and who should and shouldn't be exempt, and that it's best that Commerce be able to look at each one rather than us decide right now when we aren't sure. Second, as to, well, you and I had talked, Senator, about liability of the state, and again, we're in agreement with revenue that if the state's going to be an option manager here, and law does not take it, because we don't care if they are or aren't. But if they are going to be a manager of a pool, we don't think their liability is any greater than it exists right now, because they are under the prudent investor rule. And they do have the people up there that know how to do these kinds of investments. So, but we have, and also just to point out, we have no problem with the liability language you've changed to in the CS to take
that
them.
Would be section.
You mean for the Department of Education?
No, I'm not there yet.
Oh, you're not there yet.
I wanted to leave that for last because that's our main point. But as to section 3723050, I'm sorry, not 050, okay, the liability, 090. I mean, if you do take the state out of being an investment manager option, then we don't have any problem with the liability section as you've rewritten it, which I think is just taking out when the state would be liable. But and I'm not a torts lawyer, but I did have the torts attorneys help us draft up the liability section originally. Finally, to the REAAs. Well, we will fess up that obviously the Department of Education doesn't want the responsibility here for determining that an REAA appears to be financially capable of handling their money. And we certainly know that they get audits. I mean, OMB requires an audit. They look at the audit to make sure it complies with law, not really the bottom line. They don't care whether how they spent their money. They look at the audit to see if it fits into the mold. And then those audits go on to the Department of Ed. And evidently, it's there that I don't know what they do with them. I'm evidently not getting a straight answer. But the Department of Law's point all along, and I think we were just trying to throw out some bait here, was that REAAs are not legally separate from the state as a city is. And there's a problem with liability, and there always will be, with contracts and whatnot, as long as they are part of the state. And considering that there have been problems with the REAAs in the past, we were just attempting to come up with some means to ward off potential problems. But if DOE does not want to do this, law is certainly not insisting on it. So that's my point. It was brought up by Senator Frank wondering if maybe DOE does not have the authority right now to go in and stop them from further investment. And yes, I think they do. And I can give you the...
You think what?
That the Department of Ed, if they wanted to...
They see a problem that is exposed by an audit or whatever.
Right.
They have the power to...
to say don't renew. I don't think they can pull them out because then you've got a contract problem.
Don't renew what?
Don't renew in a pool. Because these investments have to roll over. They're short-term investments. So that means... Because they're only excess funds that can go in them. And you know, and our concern is possibly, you know, you have an REAA that's not real experienced in this, and for some reason they let go of more surplus cash than they meant to, and it gets into a longer investment than they meant to. It could happen, and then all of a sudden, where are we going with it? I know he's back here making faces at me, but anyway, I guess he needs the REAA's money. I don't know, but our point is that under 1407.030, the power of the department is that they can go in and disapprove any power of an REAA, and that's 1407.030.9. They can exercise disapproval power under 1408.101. And under 101 are the things that a regional school board may do, which is sue and be sued, contract and whatnot. And that was where we were simply going to add that they could enter into an investment pool with the approval of the department. So it appears to be a problem. I think that the language in 1407 is broad enough that they could probably come in anyway. I don't think that's been the practice of the Department of Ed is to interfere too greatly with REAAs there. They have been independent, but we're just probably being overly cautious.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
No, on that, it's been like the VSPO village or VPSO. It's the same kind of thing. They are creatures of the state. They are not independent. REAs are not, and they are. Whether we've exercised that or not, I don't know how you would make the case for saying they are separate entities. I personally believe I would prefer having them under the, I don't care if it's the Department of Education or Department of Law or whomever.
Well, just as a matter of discussion, I think their general authority, as we've heard here, is, I mean, the Department of Education does have the authority to direct an REA to do something, right? And if we put them in here, I guess I'm just looking at it from a practical standpoint. They'll probably, you know, let's say that this pool gets created, and let's say that it is something that most of the REAs find valuable place to put their short-term money. So they put their short-term money in there, but first they have to get an approval, I don't know how often, annually or something from, or I don't know how often, but they'd have to get some approval from DOE. And so DOE, as we know from our previous experience with other regulations and laws, they're gonna give them a perfunctory authority to go ahead and do that because it's just gonna become routine, and they don't have the really financial people to look at it. At one point they had said they were gonna have to put on an additional person to carry out this authority. And really the problem, if the problem has anything to do with this investment pool, it's gonna be after already everybody's already in there, and it's gonna be getting them out that's the trouble. And you're gonna find where the state's in there saying, okay, you should get out of that instead of you shouldn't get in. And they're gonna say, well, you approved it. I mean, that's the scenario that I see happening in the practical world, in the real world. And I just think that we're putting up a unnecessary step in the bureaucratic chain of events that is gonna be at best unnecessary and at worst complicating if they go to take any disciplinary or management action, supervisory action to get an REA out of the problem. My opinion.
Through the chair, this is not a serious enough issue to cause a bill to be voted.
No, not from the Department of Law standpoint.
Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you. I probably went over for you.
You don't want this back another year.
No, don't. Thank you. Okay. Let's see. Now we've got Scott Burgess. Sign here to testify.
He doesn't want to come back.
No. I just want to. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Scott Burgess with the Alaska Municipal League. Appreciate your hearing the bill. I appreciate the work of the administration in crafting a bill that we can both live with. And appreciate the chair in terms of the work draft. I think that I'll speak to the specific issues. I think there are parts of the work draft that we think are worthwhile. The specific issues that have been raised, sort of starting, I don't know which way to start. As far as the Department of Revenue, we have no problem with them being left in as a potential contractor. And you know, but if the committee feels that they shouldn't be in, we don't have any problem one way or the other. We, to be clear, the league certainly intends to form a pool. And to operate the pool, we have gone through a request for proposal, and we have people online, and we will form that organization according to whatever legislation hopefully passes. We do not intend, there are several pools around the country, 28 some statewide pools. In most of those cases, they are within the department of revenue or the treasury, whatever the state. There are independent operations like we envision. Those folks that have been involved in the committee, the finance officers and others in the organization that requested that the league pursue this issue are very strong in terms of they want something that they can control. I mean, they control their money now. They want to be able to control the pool. They don't want to just send their check to Juno and hope that it comes back with a better return. So they're we're interested in setting up this operation. We don't envision using the Department of Revenue. But it is possible. I would not go as far as Deputy Commissioner Andrews indicated that I said that this program, or allude to the fact that it, you know, off the bat, it's going to fail. But, I mean, obviously something like this, it's hard to get a sense of how many people are going to sign up and how much money this thing, before it's there. You can only sell something in a black box to a certain extent. People want to open the door before they actually put money on the, open the top to see what it is before they put their money in it. So, but it will be an issue of volume. And to the degree we don't get the volume and can't meet a professional manager, we may look to revenue. But quite frankly, I would expect that our membership would be very concerned that perhaps that expertise doesn't exist even in Department of Revenue now, and that maybe they may be looking for people to advise them as well. And so we don't know what the, quote, basis points might be in terms of revenue handling, but we know what we'll contract for. So as far as experience, sure, there is no pool, so there's no experience, but the people that we've already talked to and lined up in terms of the investment manager for this is Fidelity Investments. They run programs in Texas, in Massachusetts, in North Carolina. They're one of the largest investment advisors in the country. I think there's plenty of experience there. So, and that was through a request for proposal process that we went through last year. So again, I think that's a policy call on your part. It does, you know, the veto letter last year and the confusion we had last year was we want to run the pool, we don't want to have liability. So there is, it seems to me, two discussions there. And again, if it, in the way it was written in the bill, and we agreed to it the way it was written in the bill, is that it would be a contract situation. We would run the program, we would just be contracting with the Department of Revenue. There wouldn't be state funds involved or whatever. As far as the exemption language, I agree with Mr. Carroll, and we did seek this to, for it to be clear. While the entities themselves, the municipalities, it's not clear that the pool itself that these municipalities would have the money in have those same exemptions. And, you know, so we think it should be clear, and we support that language, and we have no problem with the, so the other side of that, making sure that the investment advisor is required to be registered under the Securities, Alaska Securities Act, as well as the federal. So we support that. As far as the REAs, this was something that Department of Law requested to be in. It was mentioned in the governor's veto letter in terms of a concern. But I think that the bigger concern that people seem to be concerned about is what they can invest in, whatever they can invest in. In other words, the investment pool is a lot more secure in terms of its whole purpose and the types of investments that you see outlined here than what they can invest on without anybody's approval right now. And I think if there's a concern in terms of oversight of those entities, then it ought to be addressed through something else, perhaps other than an investment pool, which is a very high liquid. In other words, if you've got concern where they're putting their money, you just assume they put it in something like this as something else that they might be able to do without anybody's approval. So it seemed like a perfunctory step, but again, we don't have a strong opinion, but we aren't seeking that that additional step in the process. Again, there seems to be a desire to be clear because we went from a one-page bill or one-and-a-half-page bill to a five-page bill, and so there's a lot of clarification in here. So I think that the bill does that, and we support the legislation, and I'm glad to answer any questions.
I just had one question. The department feels they can do it for 20 basis points, 1/5 of 1%. What did you guys find when you did your RFP that, you know, what did you think you could have it done for, or what could you accomplish it for?
I'm trying to remember what those are, but I think that it was more in the 40.
40 basis points.
And I think that the 20 is a number out of the sky, and I mean, our folks, we heard that, saw that. I think they were even lower than that at some point in some of the earlier discussions last year. And I think that, I guess it would be more your concern whether that's in fact, I mean, within you, you have an administration. The question is that really capturing that full cost of that program, where we know when we're going with outside folks, they're going to be sure that they're gonna get what it takes to run that program, and they're gonna keep it as low as possible so they get, we pick them versus somebody else. But, so I don't know at this point, but we are looking more in the 40 in terms of the basis points to run both the, and that would be the investment advisory as well as the custodial.
Mr. Chairman, I really am happy to see that more flesh on the creature. As you know, I raised some concerns last year, but I'm very supportive of the concept. One thing that I'm interested in on page 2, lines 15, 16, and 17, it talks about a final maturity date of 13 months after the date of purchase. How? What are we talking about there? Are we looking at excess money? Let's say that this municipality or REAA sets a budget and they have X number of dollars, and these are excess dollars to that, and so you set 13 months because it would give a full cycle. What about X municipality out there that finds they get into some problems? Do they have to sign a contract saying we're going to invest our money for X period of time when they come in? Or just curious about what considerations went into that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sturzluski, I understand you're going back to your initial comment in terms of seeing more on that. I can assure you that anybody that would have put their money in this program will see something even longer than this in terms of what, and it'll be a signed contract. Yeah. That was the intent, because it's not state money involved. It's those involved. But
no, and I'm sure that's never any question. But it.
We're going to be run out of the back of a Pontiac or anything like that. But the specifics in terms of the 13 month. I mean, the understanding here is this is a investment pool.
Mm-hmm.
The criteria are one, security first, liquidity second, and interest as well as you can do.
Anything over 4% is marvelous.
Well, but the point is these have to be very liquid type investments. We're talking about money that they may need to meet payroll.
Mm-hmm.
So and our desire will be that it'll have, if you call by say noon, the money will be in your bank by the next day. That's how liquid we're talking about in terms of ability to move money. Now, you know, we don't have all the final documents in terms of mm-hmm. whatever. If we have a pool of X million dollars, we can't, quote, I don't know what the requirements are as we set this thing up in terms of, quote, having a run on the bank, per se, but, you know, that's. So, I mean, if you've got X million dollars, it may be that, you know, if somebody owns 90% of that, we may even restrict that you can't have 90% of what's in that pool and be able to pull it out the next day. I mean, we'd be flopping back and forth.
Yeah, the legislature might take action and cut 40% from their budget.
Well, right. You know. But I'm not the one to answer that. The issue of the 13-month, though, deals with these types of investments, which are very liquid, short-term. You know, you're not out there that you're going to have a 10% penalty for early withdrawal or any of that kinds of things. But other than that, I would defer to probably people more knowledgeable in the audience than myself as far as what type of investments these are.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Let me ask, Scott, on your municipal league members, and I assume you've done some background research on this, where are most of the funds invested now? Are we going to be pulling money out of bank accounts that are in-state accounts, local bank branches throughout the state where we could cause some branches to be closed because the investments just won't, or the money just won't be in those banks to mm-hmm. keep them open?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pierce, my understanding in working through this, and obviously there was some concern raised by, in this, it allows us to invest in Alaska CDs, for example. So the first question is, where is this money? The money could be in CDs within the state, could be in just a not a passbook savings account, but basically just a commercial checking account, getting those. For the large sums of money, for the most part, that's already being invested, and for the most part, it's being invested outside. In fact, my understanding is, in dealing with a lot of the financial institutions, that they contract with investment houses outside to do their investment of their portfolio. And there's some issues that relate to federal law that I'm not an expert on, and just what they're doing. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it's outside. There's money outside now. This, in fact, would bring the money in terms of having control within Alaska. We're hiring an outside management firm, but the interest rates are going to the individuals. So it isn't being paid for the investment activity and the management of those funds. Our desire is to use an Alaska institution for custodial, in other words, the parking of the dollars, the safekeeping. So there's a difference between safekeeping of dollars and investments. And the investment, for the most part, any sophisticated investment, is being done outside. That's my understanding. But it does allow us to, one, the money would be moving in and out. I mean, people are writing checks on in Alaska banks. I mean, you still have to, whenever you spend that money, you've still got to convert it into, bring it back to the bank to issue the money. So that movement of money would be in Alaska banks. The investments could be in Alaska CDs and, you know, wherever these are, holds these other treasury notes and whatever. It would not necessarily be.
You finished? Did in your RFP, did you have any discussion or requirement that the successful bidder show financial responsibility, i.e. insurance or a bond, errors and omissions? How did you ensure that your money would be adequately safeguarded?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we will require E&O coverage on the for the financial manager, and we've been assured, and we had some discussions with the Department of Law and others in terms of drafting the legislation. There's no, with a professional manager, we would have the E&O coverage, and the people we're dealing with have quite a bit. And of course, that's the other reason for the types of investments, and to the degree we use Alaska Bank CDs that may fall below the requirements, if you see on page 2, four CDs of 500 million, they fall below that capital and surplus, then there are maturity requirements. So yes, on the advisor in terms of their E&O and make sure they're not doing something wrong, but in terms of the investments themselves, that they have the protection, either because they are the types of instruments they are, basically federal securities or public securities, or in fact they have collateral to back them up if they don't meet those thresholds. I think I hope I answered your question.
You're kind of touching on it. I'm trying to get a handle on what, you know, what percentage of that 40 basis points can be assigned to I don't know what to call it, financial risk or not financial risk, probably E&O risk or some other management risk or I guess management risk.
The other issue I didn't raise is that in our RFP, we didn't want to talk to anybody that didn't have $1 billion under management. Mm-hmm. And if they've got $1 billion under management, they've got plenty of insurance to back it up.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get a handle on. Is I don't know how much an errors and omissions policy for $1 billion under management costs. I mean, I don't know how many basis points that costs for whoever they use for an insurance company.
I think it's
Lloyd's of London or somebody like that. You know, how many. We're saying we can. The Department of Revenue is saying that they can do it, but they're assigning no risk to doing it wrong. And that's one of my major concerns, just as a legislator, is taking on risk. I have no they don't have a great deal of concern that the department, you know, has a lot of abilities in these areas, but I think we need to go in with our eyes open, know what kind of risk we're getting into, and what type of, and how much theoretically that should be assigned. And then my other question is, how we ensure that that we don't start assigning more people to this task if we were to let the Department of Revenue do it than is necessary, and how we separate it out. I mean, you hinted at it earlier when you said, you know, we know exactly how much it's going to cost us. It's going to cost us 40 basis points. Once we put it in the Department of Treasury, we frankly will lose a handle on it as a legislature. You will lose a handle on it you probably will have a better handle on it as, you know, as an investor, because you'll give them a buck and they'll tell you what they made off of it. But they won't really tell you what they could have made, you know, so you won't really know.
Mr. Chairman, I think you're correct, but I would differ in terms of the final analysis. We're going to know because they're going to tell us what they're going to charge us in terms of basis points. You won't know because what they charge us may not be the full cost.
Right, that's right.
That's what I think is what you were saying. But I mean, on the dollar, you know, we'll know how much we're getting back on the dollar. You could say, well, we may not know what we could have gotten, but that's true depending on how you move, what your portfolio is made up of. If you had it all in one thing else, you might have done better, but that's what makes a horse race kind of thing. So, I would defer. Larry can answer the E&O, but I, you know, obviously we're going to be concerned in terms of what those folks are pledging. You know, obviously fraud is probably the biggest concern that we would have. We're not asking to be exempt from those requirements, and we're obviously going to have our protection. There's no way we can assure the entities that the league is going to cover that. We're going to defer to the investment advisor. They're the ones that are going to be making the decisions, even though they are going to be restricted by this category. If they don't use these categories, then their E&O coverage is going to come into play, or what they have to pledge in the case of a loss. And if I could, just one other statement back to what Senator Pierce asked. We have a lot of communities that don't even have banks within their municipalities, much less investment options. And so we're also trying to provide some investment expertise to those. And also, it is voluntary. I mean, to the degree the community doesn't want to put their money in there and wants to put their money in the home bank and feels comfortable doing that, so be it. So I just wanted to add those two other thoughts.
Larry, you had some other comments.
My only answer to your last question, an investment advisor, per se, generally doesn't handle money, you know, in terms of you're worried about that kind of risk. They give advice. As to the advice that they give, they don't take responsibility if the stock goes down or the investment crashes. Where you have them is, if you have instructions that say, here are the parameters of our investment pool, and they go outside that, or they have the authority to make the investment without going back to the pool operator, and they violate the instruction and put it into the Grace Al Ferguson Storm Door and Airline Company when it should be in a Class A bond. Then you go after them under contract law like anybody else, and you sue them. But the errors and omissions thing, you know, that's not something that they typically do. They have, most of them are bonded. But like in our state, for them to be registered, it's a simple $5,000 bond. I mean, it's not going to cover anybody. No, you know, but it does discourage, you know, the little guys from that don't really have any skills in this area from becoming a quote unquote investment. But again, you've got the parameters set for what this pool is going to do and what it costs for them to do that. You got to remember that when a pool buys securities, it pays fees and commissions for the securities it obtains, both in and out. And you know the types of investment it makes. And if it makes investments in CDs and whatnot, like you say, early withdrawal penalties. So in this particular one, it's a short term, it's a very specialized area that people follow. The law here as you've written it, requires that the investments be in items that have maturity less than 13 months, not greater, less. So you have the liquidity. And how big is this pool going to be? It's going to gauge what its per unit costs are going to be. And is there a minimum before it starts, or is there a maximum beyond which it doesn't go? And I think those are going to be defined in the thing as it's structured. And as he points out, people who are making the decision whether to put their money in that pool should have that information at hand before they make that decision. That would be in a registration if we registered them. So I think that you've got it covered.
Ron?
If I could just add a few more comments too. On the 13-month, Scott and I, when we were going through this legislation, we put that in there because that really is the key to limit overall market risk. If you go any longer than that, obviously you're going to incur more market risk. So we felt that 13 months would keep market risk at a fairly low level. Yeah. The second comment is the Department of Revenue is very sensitive to cost allocation. We manage $7.7 billion up there, both in the general investment fund, four pension funds, a couple of endowments, and a number of other funds. So we're very sensitive as to allocating our costs out correctly to each one of those various funds that we manage up there. Just to give you an idea, in the pension funds, for the investment advisor, for all the custodial safekeeping costs, for our own personnel costs, so forth and so on, we're running in the neighborhood of 16 to 17 basis points, which is very low in the market.
Okay. Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you. Okay, anything else that come before the committee? If you want, if you have to offer something.
Well, Mr. Chairman, before offering it, this is how I would see it right now, and I just want to get some discussion and don't want to do what you don't want to have done. But item one, I frankly would like to see the retention of the original bill, which required the approval of the Commissioner of Education. REAs are strange creatures. I've always felt that there needed to be more than filing. You know, I'm hoping that under the current administration, they're at least looking at management audits, but I can remember back when Senator Ferguson was here, it was very perfunctory, and I mean, he led the effort to try to get more done, but I don't know that anything is being done. It just seems to me we need to recognize life as it really will be in the courts. I would feel coming down on the side of, in other words, to retain the original bill and item one. Number two, I would support, but could be persuaded, I would support the addition of the registration, you know, as you've done in the committee substitute. Under the three, the management option, and I've discussed this with you and we've heard it today, I would come down on the side of going back to the original bill and allowing them that flexibility. I have those same concerns that you do, but I think that it's important we get this through, and I think that the hearing, just the discussion today, that's the side I would come down on. And I would, on the item four, support the addition of investment manager registration. That's kind of where I am now, but if you would be interested in that kind of a motion, I would be happy to make it, but it's up to you. Understand we're short today.
I don't think I want a motion today.
Okay.
Any other comments or questions?
Okay.
Thank you.